Hello and welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm Ann Gordon here with my friend and chavruta Yardena Osband, our daf of the day, Masachet Kiddushin, daf Lamed Dalet, page 34. So our Gemara returns to the Mishnah, the complicated Mishnah from several dapim ago, and it cites it, Umitzvah Seishas Mangrama Nashim Pturot. You thought we were done with that, but we're not, right? The idea that positive time-bound commandments are the commandments from which women are exempt. And the Gemara asks here, Minalan, how do we know that women are in fact exempt from positive time-bound commandments? And there's a good amount of, I would say, Gemara logic, investigative thumb, you know, working to figure this out. So it says, Gemara mi tefillin. We learn it from tefillin, right? Women are exempt from wearing tefillin. Ma tefillin nashim turot. The same way that women are exempt from wearing tefillin, with tefillin, I should say more carefully, just as tefillin, which are in fact a positive time-bound commandment, meaning you must wear tefillin at thus and such a time, meaning during the day, whatever, then women are exempt from tefillin, so they're going to be exempt from all other mitzvot that have the same commonality. Mitzvot says man grama, the time-dependent positive commandments. Utfilin gemar lami talmud Torah. Now, this is where it gets more complicated. Because the question, of course, is, you know, how do we know that tefillin, that women are exempt from tefillin to begin with? The exemption from tefillin is learned from the exemption of women from Talmud Torah, from the mitzvah of learning Torah. Now, I know here we all are learning Torah, but from the Mishnah perspective, as we already discussed on that day, you know, women are exempt. They're not obligated. They can, they do, you get reward, but it's not the same thing as being commanded in it. Ma Talmud Torah Nashim Pturot, Af Tfilin Nashim Pturot. So the same way that women are exempt from Torah study, they're also exempt from wearing tefillin. I say we need some thumbs here to do our investigations, because we've just established that the reason that women are exempt from all positive time-bound commandments is because of being exempt from tefillin. And the reason they're exempt from tefillin, yo, it's because they're exempt also from Talmud Torah. But exempting women from Talmud Torah, you may recall, is not that simple to begin with. V'nakish tefillin l'mezuzah. So now let's say the opposite. Let's put tefillin compared to mezuzah, the mitzvah of mezuzah, as opposed to the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. So we say like this. Mezuzah is a mitzvah in which women are obligated. It's a positive commandment, but it's not time-bound. It's location-bound, physicality, right? Tefillin, l'talmud Torah, itkish. So now we want to say that, okay, mezuzah is a mitzvah that women are obligated in. And so by that logic, the moment you put tefillin with mezuzah, you would say women are also obligated in tefillin. And then, so the Gemara says, no, because tefillin were compared, right, in this juxtaposition to Talmud Torah. Ben parasha rishona, ben parasha shniya, tefillin lemezuzah, but parasha shniya lo itkish. So what happens? The tefillin, in the text itself of the Tosk that talks about tefillin is juxtaposed, it's put in proximity in the text to Talmud Torah. And that takes place both in the paragraph of Shema Vishinantam, and it takes place in the paragraph of Shema V'hayam Shemoa, where we get the verse of V'limadetem Otam, which we spend so much time discussing. And then the Gemara points out that Tefillin and Mezuzah are only placed in proximity once you get to the second paragraph, meaning V'hayam Shemoa of Shema, not in the first time. So then we say, well, if you're already going to be putting Tefillin next to Torah study there and also there, meaning it's so common that they appear together twice, right? So then that's enough to say, let's compare tefillin to learning Torah. And the same way that women are exempt from learning Torah, they're going to be exempt from learning, from wearing tefillin, from laying tefillin, really is the right verb, I guess, as compared to mezuzah. And then the Gemara goes on, v'nakish mezuzah l'talmud Torah. Well, in that case, let's put, you know, I like we're gonna try all the possible permutations here. Let's put mezuzah, we'll compare it, juxtapose it to Talmud Torah, and say that the same way that women the same way that the women are exempt from Talmud Torah, they should also be exempt from mezuzah. V'nakish mezuzah l'talmud Torah. Lo sel kadatach. So the Gemara says, no, you would never think of that. Don't think of that. Dechtiv leman yerbu yimechem. Because when it comes to the mitzvah of mezuzah, there's a reason given. And it says, in order that your days should be multiplied, that you should have many days, meaning that you should live longer. Gavri bai chai, nashei lo bai chai. And how could you ever say that the men need that long life, but the women don't need that long life? That's ridiculous. You could, I mean, it doesn't quite say that's ridiculous, but that's the implication, with the idea being that you would never conclude that women could be exempt from mezuzah, even though mezuzah can, in fact, be found in proximity to Talmud Torah. So at the end of the day, mezuzah is obligatory for both men and women. Talmud Torah is obligatory only for the men, and women are exempt. Tefillin is obligatory for the men, and the women are exempt. And all other positive time-bound commandments, as an inference from this kind of logic, women are, again, men are obligated in them, and women are, once again, exempt.
Well, look, this is a very famous Gemara, and, you know, we really could have read this whole daf, and we're not doing it justice. And I also feel like it's annoying because a lot of people are going to be, this is going to be a catch-up daf, right? It's going to be on Rosh Hashanah. So I don't know when people are listening to it, and it's a little chaval because I feel like this could get, you know, multiple podcasts, multiple episodes just to discuss this. So, you know, this whole idea of how they make this connection through tefillin is very interesting. And it always, again, brings up these sort of questions of, did they really learn the concept from tefillin? Did they have the concept and they connected it to tefillin? I don't know, Anne. Like, it's a little chicken and egg here.
Right. So I think that these juxtapositions are, or for that matter, every time they come and say minalan, like, right, they know that this is the halacha. The question is, what's the sourcing for it? And I think it's a legitimate question. You want to know, where do we get that from? But they're not questioning the fact of it.
Right. But I think that's why it always gets into that meta question of, like, if they know what the answer is, what's the purpose of the minalan question? And I think the idea is to say, we can hang it on something. There is a making this up out of nowhere, right? But the question is, would they land somewhere else if the question was a different question?
Right. That's a fair, you know, can of worms, if you want to
open
it.
Right. And I think that's what makes this particular passage, you know, so particularly difficult. So what sort of happens, I'm going to move on a little bit. Like, what happens on Amud Bet, there's a little section here about Sukkah, is that they sort of want to try to find, you know, other mitzvot that maybe are time bound that women do have to do, right? V'harei Re'iyah. So what about the mitzvah of Re'iyah, which is that you have to literally appear before God during the three festivals of Sukkot, Pesach, and Shavuot? The mitzvah rasei shazman grama. It's a mitzvah rasei shazman grama. The tama diktav rachmana zuchurecha, right? And the only reason that women aren't obligated to do this is because it specifically says in the Torah, it describes it as saying you're males. Lehotzi anashim. In other words, the Torah had to specifically exclude women. Halav hachik is not for this word of your males. Nashim chayavot. Women would actually be chayav. And therefore, that what does that teach us? That women are chayav in mitzvah rasei shazman grama. They're only patur when there is a specific, when the Torah specifically tells us that. So the Gemara basically says, Itzirich, no, you needed to say your males. Sakatatech amina, because you might have said, Nelef re'iyah re'iyah mehakel. Let us learn from a gezerah shavah of appearing and appearing from the mitzvah of hakel. In other words, we have the mitzvah of hakel, which takes place every 7 years at the temple that all men, women, and children have to go to. Both of them have this concept of re'iyah, of appearing before God. And since women have to do hakel, you might have thought, oh, well, then you also have to do re'iyah of the shlosh regalim. And so the point is, no, compared to the other time of re'iyah, you would not have to do it. So then the Gemara is going to go back to tefillin, v'adzalivna b'tefillin l'ptura, right? But rather than saying that we're going to derive this rule from tefillin, that women are patur from all mitzvot aseh shazman grama, nilav misimcha l'chiyuva, maybe we derive it from the mitzvah of rejoicing, right? And so we talked about this before. What was the mitzvah, what's the mitzvah of rejoicing? The mitzvah of rejoicing is the mitzvah that we have, that, you know, you have to be happy, v'samachta v'chagecha, right? Ata uvincha ubitecha. So this was mentioned earlier in the daf, that it's, it mentions that even your daughter has to be happy on all of the major holidays. So that would seem to imply that women are also obligated. So the Gemara says, no, actually women are exempt. Amar Abaye. So what does he say? That basically women, it's their husband who's responsible to make them rejoice. Okay, so maybe the daf did redeem itself here, right? So therefore, mm-hmm. we can't say Shazman Gorma for that reason. Amana my ekalamemar. Okay, but what about the case of a widow? You know, what's there to say? In other words, who's going to make sure that she rejoices since she's not going to have she doesn't have a husband? Bishuya etzlo. So basically the Gemara says, right, women do not actually, don't actually have to do simcha, right? But what it's saying is that when you're talking about it's Bishruya Tzlo who stays with, you know, or visits the head of the household. In other words, the person whose household that the widow's with, that's actually who's responsible to make her happy. And so I thought this was a very interesting type of idea here, that when it comes to the mitzvah simcha, women are not obligated, but it's actually something that men and society have to take care of for women. Either their husbands have to do it, and for a woman who's not, the presumption is that the widow is going to be invited somewhere, and therefore, the head of that household has to do it. Now, what's glaringly missing is single women, right? I think today we have much different sort of the idea, you know, that doesn't even occur to the Gemara here, which is very interesting. It's either you're married or you're widowed. There's no discussion of divorced women. There's no discussion of women who aren't married, who maybe I'll even give it because in the Gemara's, you know, construct, you stayed with your father's household till you got married. So let's say somebody whose father had passed away, that doesn't seem to be there at all. And then the Gemara is going to go back to again, you know, why tefillin? Like, you know, why tefillin? Again, it's going to say maybe we should learn it from Hakel. So I think when the Gemara does this exercise, you know, this makes the question that I started with like, okay, so they like find something to hang their hat on. But the Gemara then really goes to be like, no, tefillin is the best example. And this is why it's the best example.
Yeah, but it's a lot of work to get there.
It is a lot of work to get there. But I guess my point is that, and now I'm sort of like going back on my original question. If the point is to just say like, oh, we need a source, you know, we know what the answer is, but we just need a source, then like, why make all the effort to prove it?
Yeah, I guess. I feel like, but this is what the Gemara does, right? Making sure that they're keeping alive all of the logic and learning that got to the conclusion, or trying to recreate it in the absence of having a clear tradition, depending, right? Meaning, I don't know, I feel like Minalan is a common question because it's part of the job, right? This is what the Gemara needs to do to find out why is the halacha what it is. And sometimes, meaning they already know that the halacha is what it is, so they can't say what should the halacha be. Now they have to trace it back, and that's not always so easy.
Right, it's not always so easy, but they're really, it's interesting, they're sort of going through every single mitzvah possible to try to deep dive, like, why couldn't we learn from here? Like, again, I think it's trying to show, like, the methodology is not, you know, it's not by chance.
That's fair.
Well, that's our DAF discussion for the day. Rank us, review us on all major podcasts. Thank you to Rabbi Michelle Farber for hosting us on the Hadron website. Let us know what you thought about this DAF on our Talking Talmud Facebook page, and until tomorrow, go and learn.